Welcome to Coastal Cafe. I'm Aaron Barnett, your host today. Coastal Cafe is a joint production of Washington Sea Grant at the University of Washington College of the Environment and KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend. Today our guest is University of Washington PhD candidate Barbara Crystal. Barbara is a PhD candidate at the University of Washington, completing her interdisciplinary dissertation in marine biology and literature. Her work has recently awarded a grant to develop a public scholarship project that extends the guiding principles of community science into the realm of humanities. That public scholarship centers around the question, how do we know water, fresh, brackish, or salt, and how we express our relationships with water through an artistic lens. She has partnered with the Port Townsend Marine Science Center and the Consortium of Marine Science Centers in Washington and welcomes sharing this project with our listeners and inviting them to contribute their artistic expressions, such as photography, material art, film, music, verse, performance, via digital upload, by mind you, to include on the website, which we will go into more detail shortly. Welcome to Coastal Cafe, Barbara.
Thank you, Aaron. I'm so excited to be here.
So am I.
Yeah.
So, could you give us a little bit of background on yourself, your professional career, your academic career? And then if you could talk about why water and the humanities joined in an interdisciplinary way is important to you.
That's a phenomenal question, because water to me is so magical and just mysterious. And I can see that I'm also glowing and water's flowing inside me right now as I discuss this with you. My background has been interdisciplinary from the very beginning. I've majored in literature, political science, marine biology, zoology. I've been an author, an environmental planner, and now I'm again back in school, considering those years of wealth of experience that I wanted to bring into basically understanding water better. And my role as an environmental planner has really taught me about how we can be informed from art, from artistry. So science and art really do go hand in hand, and oftentimes we become fixated and focused on a science lens that we fail to see a bigger picture. So because of water's fluidity and just the expanse of, you know, materials that it contains, not just chemical elements, but it's really an alchemical source, right? It's like alchemy. You have creatures, you have chemistry, you have tides, you have currents. And just that wealth, I think, is of value in terms of understanding that we need a holistic study of it. So oftentimes, you know, when we see art and the depiction of the ocean, it creates a sense of awe and mystery and uncanniness, because we come from the sea. And it also creates some kind of fear. And mm-hmm. I think that fear is good because it keeps us aware and mindful of nature and its power. But we also need to also understand that fear is desirable. And it's a desire that helps us basically evoke our own oceanic spirit. So I think art really does that, because the way that it presents color or it presents an image draws us in and mm-hmm. basically attracts our attention in ways that we would otherwise ignore.
So that reminds me of some of the, what you were saying reminds me of some of the paintings I've seen from the Romantic period. Yeah. Of the sea and sailors and whaling, and they depict the sea as a very bad place, you know, up until the 19th century. And so obviously we've learned a lot about the sea through science, and so we don't see paintings like that anymore.
Right.
You know, because we have a better understanding of it. Is that along the same lines of what you're saying?
Absolutely. Like, I definitely know what you're referring to, most likely J.W.M. Turner, who paints these...
That's right.
Yes,
yeah.
These kind of ferocious, awe-inspiring scenes of the ocean, again, that can be sort of paralyzing because the swirling, the basic maelstroms, which people didn't know about. Mm-hmm. And in fact, there was this old sort of myth that the maelstroms were krakens. So it was this belief that the Kraken would, you know, take you down and suck you down into the vortex and you'd never be seen again. And so, of course, we have literature basically announcing that and celebrating that, definitely Edgar Allan Poe, Descent into the Maelstrom, mm-hmm. right, and Message Found in a Bottle, two of the texts that I also teach in my coursework. But yeah, the art has, again, influenced us, and it resonates with us. And what I'm trying to also convey, that art also attracts us to understanding the ocean in particular ways that we would have otherwise ignored. And so I think art is important in that regard, because again, it does create sort of an inclusiveness, and also evokes our desire. Mm-hmm. And I think that is also key, because again, it's something that we can then, I guess, think about, right, and address, and then see not only how we represent art, but how it shapes us in terms of what we study, right, and where we go in right. our future science.
And so your goal is to convey this through what you mentioned as the public scholarship.
Yes.
What do you mean by public scholarship?
Well, just like art informs science, uh-huh. the public also informs science. So what we're trying to engage here is this idea of an academic institution in line with a public concern. So public scholarship is really inviting the public to engage with creating knowledge mm-hmm. and helping us create an advanced knowledge that is all inclusive, especially when it comes to something like the ocean, right, which is fluid and has no borders. And especially, again, when the ocean connects all of us. So whatever happens, for example, in Japan, where they're not having the Olympics, is felt here, right? And through the ocean, that becomes more apparent. And I think that the public can help us then also focus where we concentrate our efforts and things mm-hmm. that we might otherwise have ignored or not just thought of. Right, so they're again bringing attention to our work.
I have your website up in front of me right now, The Art of Water.
Yes.
And it's www.theartofwater.global. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay.
Global was carefully selected.
Oh, good. And so you have.
Brilliant.
So this is an online gallery. Is that what you call it?
Yes.
And you have music, performance, words. Well, speaking of performance, I understand you're a tap dancer who likes to tap dance on docks.
I am. If you'd like to see the about page, you would see me
okay.
tap dancing there, of course. I think we do need a wealth of diverse voices. That's mm-hmm. why I created those particular exhibits. As you can see, my tap dancing, which of course is focused on using your legs to communicate.
Art on water.
Art on water. and so again, it's just a reflective component to demonstrate that art is diverse, art is versatile, art communicates in ways we would have otherwise, mm-hmm. again, not been privy to. And I think, again, that art helps us then perhaps focus on something that we would have otherwise, again, ignored or dismissed, like the ways that barnacle feed. They use their legs, right? And they mm-hmm. kick their legs out to feed and to breathe. Mm-hmm. And then in studying that particular component, we can then become more aware of how barnacles filter the ocean, which then is the science, right? So it's a different kind of communication.
So. Yeah. I noticed in one of your artists is Shayna Leib. Is it Leib or Leib?
Leib.
Leib. And she's a glass artist, and she's created a piece called Stenivia 2 that looks like waves, and it's very dynamic. And then there's some ceramic work, and then some oil, watercolor. It looks like watercolor.
Yeah, absolutely. What's interesting about that glass work and why I'm particularly drawn to it is because she also borrows from the style of the 19th century. Father Santine, Rudolf and Leopold Blaschka, if I remember their first names correctly, actually created glassworks of marine invertebrates that's now on display at the museum at Harvard. And Drew Harvell, I believe, who is also a UW graduate, now sort of oversees or curates that collection. And from understanding their glass-blown works of marine invertebrates, it actually led scientists to start thinking more about evolution and seeing how these species have changed throughout time. And you mentioned this idea of my online gallery. And yes, it's an online living gallery. It's a public museum, so to speak, so that, again, we engage with what the public is interested in. But museums preserve, right? Mm-hmm. And they highlight and they specialize. And that's why I think that a museum is a fitting way to engage the public, because it displays the things that they're interested in, and it also displays things we should value.
Let's go to another section here, like the photography. Could you pick one of these artists here and talk about him or her? Or talk about the artist? Yeah, could you just pick one of the artists, and if you'd like to mention something about one of these artists, I'd love to hear it.
I've never met these artists, and so I think what's wonderful and something I didn't realize would come about from this project was a connection. And a connection via online, via email, via no other kind of meeting, not face-to-face, not Zoom, not any sort of other way to communicate other than a form that they fill out, and then their email address, and then I always write to thank them. And then we start conversation again just via email. So Alice DiCerta, who contributed her photography of Water is Life, Montessori, I think is really fascinating because her explanation was that it's school kids, and the way she developed this film is emblematic of the fluidity of water. And I think she just creates this watery world through the image of children at play. And I think that just is really profound.
Yeah, in that picture, that image, I can see some brittle stars.
Yes.
And some other water type shapes.
Right.
It's very nice.
Yeah, so again, looking at, to me, as a scientist, is how we are shaped by water.
Mm-hmm.
Not only because it clearly flows in our bodies, but it shapes how we think.
Did you grow up around water?
I actually did. I'm from Argentina originally, and there was a beach there called Mar del Plata. And I know you asked me earlier how I came to be engaged with water. So my grandfather used to tell me stories. And embarrassingly enough, I was always the main character. So the stories would begin, una vez, which is Spanish for once upon a time, right? And there was a little girl named Barbara. And then it would proceed from there. And I was like some mermaid or some water hero. Or I was always the hero, which was great and phenomenal. But again, that storytelling is key. And all the art that I have here is a storytelling, right? A storytelling via music, via pictures, via performance. And it allows the storyteller to be the main character because they're the one presenting their viewpoint and their perspective. But it also allows them to be a main character with the ocean, with the water. And I find that really valuable because to this day, I still remember those stories that I was told as a child many years later. and again, it always connected me with water. I'm an active swimmer. I played water polo on the women's water polo team. My husband is also an active swimmer, and we're both actually open water swimmers. So again, using the medium of sport in this case to understand the clarity of why we need water.
If you're just joining us, this is KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, and I'm Aaron Barnett, today's host of Coastal Cafe, and we're speaking with Barbara Crystal about water and art and its importance. You have been listening to a sampling of music by Joshua W. Scott that can be found on the Art of Water website. I'm on the literature or the words part of the website. I found a poem that I really like, Would you like to read it, or would you like to have me read it?
If you could please read it.
Actually, you can't see the screen, so I'd love to read it.
Thank you. Apologies.
So this is called Sinking. It's by Joshua W. Scott. I was sinking, falling like a leaf, ricocheting off the living coral reef. Down a canyon my eyes could not contain, seaweed jungles that never saw the rain. I was sinking, but the light did not grow dim. I felt something, like a should or a fin. There was danger, but not the reckless kind. There was beauty, but not the reckless kind. I was sinking down. I was sinking deep and deeper still, slowly down until the only option was the ever-present now. All that mattered was the being, not the how. I awakened to my present state of mind. I was altered in a way I can't define. The only option was the ever-present now. All that matters is the being, not the how. I really like that.
I'm crying. See? Water. I love it too.
Are tears water or saline?
I don't know.
Are they technically water?
I'm going with water.
Everything, well, that sounds good to me. I'll take water.
Everything's water.
Okay. Do you know any of these writers?
Should I confess?
I mean, you can if you want.
Okay. That's actually my husband.
Oh, it is. Oh,
and so I'm so moved that you select that poem to use.
Oh, good.
So absolutely. And I can tell you all about him as well.
Oh, no. We'll save that for another time.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to go to the music section of your virtual gallery. Is there any of these the in the music section that you'd like to comment on?
Yeah, I definitely think that Ian Urbina would be someone to focus on, because Ian Urbina actually is a journalist, and he just wrote a book called The Outlaw Ocean, which is a New York Times bestseller. And he wanted to engage his son in understanding the ocean better and falling in love with the ocean. And so to connect with his young son, he started this ocean music project that translates journalism into music. And in doing so, he gained just a litany again of other people contributing to his own website. Mm-hmm. And I contacted him earlier because he's done other work in terms of bringing attention to the lawless ocean, right? Which is the freedom of the sea still resonates. And he's trying to bring attention to situations like piracy or dumping or, you know, a whole slew of problems happening at sea. And again, trying to create an international focus. So he translated that journalism into music, and we got in touch with one another through just mutual work, and he was the first to contribute to my site.
Oh.
So I'm just really proud to be able to highlight his work and to be able to connect with him not only on a science realm but an artistic realm.
I read that book in graduate school.
Excellent.
It was a required reading for a class I had.
Yeah.
Maritime law.
Yeah. Phenomenal.
So it sounds like one of the things that you're trying to accomplish here is to get people to think about the sea, water, in a different way, with this, you know, bringing certain issues to light.
Yes. And unite us. The water's a unifying force. And I think that is more prevalent and more crucial than I think other issues. Mm-hmm. Right? So I think that's one of my key goals, is again to unify us and do it through this watery fluid medium so that we're not so stagnant, right? Or concretized in our views that we can't be open.
Are you incorporating, or how are you incorporating this into your current teaching curriculum? Like, I know you're teaching a summer class, or and how have you done it in the past? I'd be interested to hear about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I teach in what's called Blue Humanities, to borrow a term from Steve Mentz, who coined it to begin with. And because my background, my degrees, and my work experience is, again, in literature and marine biology, I can coordinate the two. And so I combine literature, art, and marine sciences into my coursework. So, for example, I do teach The Little Mermaid, which is key. And I also bring in other components to discuss The Little Mermaid. For example, there's actually a group of women known as the Mermaids in Korea who maintain sustainable aquaculture and don't use any sort of scuba equipment to dive, you know, into the ocean. And they've had this 100-year practice, and now they've just been incorporated into a cultural heritage museum because of their work. Wow. So that's based in Korea, and they're still very active. So I show that as an art form and also as aquaculture practice. I discuss the history of mermaids, which actually has a 3,000-year-old history beginning in Babylon, right? And then I also incorporate the fact that Peter Paul Rubens painted what we know as a Rubenesque form, and sailors who were out to sea for long periods of time often mistook manatees for mermaids because they were influenced by the art of Peter Paul Rubens, again, thinking of the Rubenesque form of a woman. So there's a whole slew of history in this Little Mermaid story, right, by Hans Christian Andersen. And we read it through that lens so that we understand that it really is about transformation, but in more ways than just losing a tail and getting legs, like evolution.
Wow.
So that's just one example. I teach Edgar Allan Poe, of course, as I said, and Message Found in a Bottle and Descent into the Maelstrom. And I will talk about how whirlpools are made, how they're created. I'll show some film about it. And then we talk about the superstitions at sea, of course, and the superstition of the whirlpool being a kraken. And so I incorporate all kinds of components to engage clearly a class that's made up of different age groups and different majors and different interests.
Have you any plans to add any more on, other than what people contribute to your museum? Are you going to add anything else to it in the future, or do another like project?
Yes.
Oh, I'd love to hear about it.
Well, the plan pre the pandemic was for me to create displays at the actual marine science centers. Mm. So the goal was to have a display that was live and interactive and physical. Because of the pandemic, I translated that work to an online medium. And I will continue to have that medium. And then in future, I would definitely like to display at the marine science centers and to give more lectures, because in addition to Port Townsend, I've also partnered with the Sea Discovery Center in Poulsbo and so many others, the Sea Doc Society and the San Juan Islands. Salish Magazine and Sea Media are going to be doing a story as well. So I want to also provide a physical space, because I think also that tangibility is a key component for engaging people. That immersion, so to speak.
Are there any other contemporary artists that come to mind that really embody what it is you're trying to share that you can talk about before we wrap things up?
Well, personally, I'm also very much aware of an artist, and I'm going to have to defer her name to the internet because I don't remember, but she has an organization called Washed Ashore. And her organization actually collects plastic and then shapes them into an aesthetic component of the ocean. She's been featured in the Smithsonian, and she has this traveling tour. And it was interesting in an interview that she presented, she talks about the dangers of making ocean plastic too aesthetic, because she's made her artwork so beautiful. And we're going to have to just put in her name because it just escaped me. Apologies. But it's Washed Ashore. Great organization. They collect plastic and then they create all kinds of artistry from that plastic that depicts the ocean. And I do use that in my class. So apologies again why I don't remember
her name. It's Angela Pozzi.
Thank you.
Pozzi. Angela Hazeltine Pozzi.
Thank you.
I just looked her up.
Yes. And so I think that is a contemporary artists that I would definitely defer to as representing that, again, commingling of science and art, as well as the problems that we need to address.
Mm-hmm. Right. I remember seeing a picture somewhere that a professor showed us in class of what looked like jellyfish. It was a beautiful picture. It looked like jellyfish. And you said, what do you think those are? And we said, oh, it looked like jellyfish. And what they were upside down shopping bags, plastic shopping bags in water.
Yes.
And it was beautiful. I mean, they really were attractive.
Exactly.
And emotionally, that hit me more than probably any other thing I've seen, you know, about, you know, marine debris, you know, plastics in the ocean and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But it was a very effective mechanism.
Yes. Good point.
So I suggest our listeners to go to Wash to Shore, Art to Save the Sea. WashToShore.org. It's a great site. There's some great art. Actually, this is first-rate stuff.
Yes.
If only our listeners could see. So, is there anything you'd like to add before we wrap things up that you'd like to say while you're here?
Well, I would definitely love to invite your audience to contribute their art. As you noted, I have six separate categories, and they're all extremely valuable because, again, they shake up our senses and they shake our sensibilities and they ask us to pay attention.
And so that's www.theartofwater.global. And this is Barbara Crystal that we're speaking with. I'd like to thank you all for joining us. This is Aaron Barnett, and you've been listening to Coastal Cafe, a joint production of Washington Sea Grant at the UW College of the Environment and KPTZ 91.9 FM. Washington Sea Grant helps people and marine life thrive by providing research, technical expertise, and education that support the conservation of our ocean and coastlines. I'd like to thank our program director, Larry Stein, and production engineer, Jared Dufresne. And as always, a special shout-out to the band Kuich for sharing their music with us at the open and closing of this program. Thank you for listening, and have a great day. Hatuasiku ha, hingin ani. Hatuasiku ha.